I should say, our series based on two wonderful books, The Four Agreements by Don Ruiz, and the companion book written with he and his son, Don Jose Ruiz, entitled The Fifth Agreement. These two books, many of you are reading them and you know this, these two books really address ancient Toltec wisdom. The agreements provide a framework for us to release harmful social conditioning, because if you've lived in this world, you've been socially conditioned, and also to stop allowing the opinions of others to rule our lives. There's just a profound freedom in this. So if you've been with us for the beginning of the series, for agreement number one and two, how many have found them to be easy? Anybody? Well, good. I'm not the only one, right? Decidedly, they are not easy because we are so conditioned, and it takes a little work. It takes some honest reflection on our own part about to what degree these agreements are controlling our lives, and it takes practice. So just a review for those of you who might not be here and for all, have been here, and for all of us who we didn't do it last week, so we'll do a quick review. Number one, agreement number one is be impeccable with your word. Speak with integrity. Say only what you mean. Avoid using the word to speak against yourself or to gossip about others. Use the power of your word in the direction of truth and love. A powerful agreement. And the second one is, don't take anything personally. Nothing others do is because of you. What others say and do is a projection of their own reality, their own dream, in unity we would say their own consciousness. When you are immune to the opinions and actions of others, you won't be the victim of needless suffering. And so today we move into agreement number three, which is very simply, don't make assumptions. Not so simple, is it? Looks simple, but it isn't. In our human skins, we have the tendency to just make assumptions about everything. Have you ever noticed that? We do. Ruiz notes, the problem with making assumptions is that we believe they are true. We could swear they are real. I personally think that we could pass lie detector tests about our assumptions. That's how real they are to us. And here's the way the first three agreements beautifully merge. The language on this slide is going to be slightly different than what I'm going to say, so I hope that doesn't confuse you. Well, here's what happens. First of all, we misunderstand, so we make an assumption about what someone else is saying or doing. That's the first step. Then we take the other person's behavior personally. Then we blame them and react by sending out emotional poison with our word. And this creates, Ruiz says, a whole big drama for nothing. So just an example, a hypothetical example. Let's say Alice has an extra ticket to the theater. So Alice calls her friend Teresa to ask if Teresa would want to go. And she leaves that message on Teresa's voicemail. But she waits day after day and Teresa doesn't call her back. So she's beginning to wonder why Teresa hasn't called her back. And her self-talk might sound something like this. Well, Teresa hasn't called me back. She must not want to go. I bet she's made some new friends at work. I bet she doesn't even want to be with me anymore. Come to think of it, that Teresa always was a jerk. Now let's back up a little bit and kind of explore what happened. When did she start becoming not becoming impeccable with her word? Two negatives. But when did she fail to become impeccable with her word? How did it start? It started self-talk. It started before she uttered a word to Teresa. It started here, okay? So did she take it personally? You're not kidding. Took it personally big time, didn't she? All right, so then after a while, she decided she's got all this story spinning in her head. She calls Teresa back. And Teresa says, oh, I'm so sorry I didn't call you back, Alice. I really meant to. I've been so busy at work. I can't go that night. I've got a work thing. And I can't talk right now. I'm busy. Well, that was the last straw. Alice screamed into the phone, "Don't worry, I don't want to go with you anyway, and I don't even want to see you again." I miss the old days when you could hang up a phone, right? So, the point is, Ruiz says, when you make assumptions, you are telling yourself a story, and the story could be true, or the story could be false. Absolutely. And the truth leads us to authenticity, happiness, heaven on earth. The fiction we create in our own minds, however, creates limitation, drama, and suffering. One assumption leads to another. Did you notice that with Alice? We jump to conclusions. We take our story personally. We blame others. Often we start gossiping, resulting in our messages becoming more distorted and widespread. And I forgot to tell you the end of the story. Alice, after all of that, calls another friend, Martha, to invite her to the, you know, to the event. And in the process of talking to Martha, she just lays into Teresa, telling Martha everything that's in her mind about how horrible Teresa is. And it seems so true to her because those are her assumptions. But she just makes it even more distorted and more widespread. And that's the way it happens. And it can be really toxic. So the thing is, this is a powerful quote. This is what happens, first of all. We go into gossip. It ended there. The story ended there. The communication becomes triangular, and it can even be the end of a friendship over some little thing, over some tiny thing. And really, this is true. It happens in all kinds of relationships. It is the end of many relationships. So now Ruiz writes, all the sadness, I'm sorry, I'm getting myself off. This is what I'm calling today. Did anybody notice the title of the lesson and wonder what it was? Assumicide. I learned a new word this week. I'm so excited. Assumicide. And it's actually a psychological term. Some of you may know it. But I'm defining it as to allow our assumptions about others to diminish or destroy our own happiness and our relationships. And so that's what this is all about, allowing those assumptions to destroy our own inner peace and our relationships with others. So here's the slide that I wanted to get to. This is in both books, in the fourth and the fifth agreement. It says, and this is the fourth agreement language, all the sadness and drama you have lived in your life was rooted in making assumptions and taking things personally. All the sadness and drama. Now, actually, in the fifth agreement, they say almost all, which I personally can buy better, almost all of the sadness and drama. And he says the whole war of control between humans is based on this. So if you have the books, this is on page 64 in the four agreements. It's on page 68 in the fifth agreement. And if you don't have the book, I think there are pens in front of you. Would you mind to jot down just that first sentence? Just write it down so you can take it home this week and really analyze to what degree is this true in your life. Because it's a personal, we can't do this for each other. We each have to agree to do it. And the sentence I'm asking you to write down, I'll leave it up for another minute. All the sadness, or let's say almost if you want to, almost all the sadness and drama you have lived in your life is rooted in making assumptions and taking things personally. That's a really powerful statement. Here's the problem. We don't perceive things the way they are. Eric Butterworth says we perceive the things the way we are. We perceive things through our own consciousness and our own lens. Jesus addressed this when the Jewish authorities were challenging him about healing on the Sabbath. He said, "Judge not by appearances, but judge with righteous judgment." Judge not by appearances, but judge with righteous judgment. Righteous means right thinking, seeing the spiritual truth beyond what our senses reveal. Jesus is referring here to our power of discernment. When we realize that the Christ Spirit dwells in us and all others, and yes, all others, no exceptions, we open our eyes to spiritual understanding and we see things as Jesus saw. And therefore, we don't make these human judgments. Asimov said, "Your assumptions are your windows on the world. Scrub them off every once in a while or the light won't come in." And that's so true. If they're true, hold on to them. If they're false, release them. Because when we misunderstand, we make an assumption about the meaning. And when the truth comes out, we find things are not exactly as we expected. And that can cause us heartache. I have a really good friend whose daughter, Kelsey, has been dating a young man for a long time. And Kelsey's birthday is right after Christmas. I think it's the 27th or 28th, I forget. But at any rate, she overheard a conversation with her fiancé, Brian, or no, not fiancé, with her boyfriend, Brian's grandmother. She overheard the grandmother say something on the phone. From that, she assumed that her birthday present was going to be a ring, an engagement ring. So she told her entire family, she told all her friends, she bought a new outfit, she talked her mother into having a big birthday bash, she got her hair done, she got her nails done so it would look beautiful in the picture, you know? And the night of the party, I'm sure you're all guessing what happened, she waited to open Brian's gift to last, and it was small, and it looked exactly like a ring, and she looked out at everybody who loved her, and she opened the present, and it was a small necklace that she had admired in a store. And of course, she was brokenhearted. Now, that might seem extreme, but really, I think we do that all the time to a lesser degree. I think we make assumptions based on very little evidence. That was something she wanted so badly that she created the story in her mind, and it didn't materialize in the outer world. So, the question is, how do we break this vicious cycle of assumicide? Ruiz says one of the ways we do it is by asking questions. Now, we're going to return to that later, but I want you to think about that as we go through some of the ways that he says we most commonly engage in assumicide, okay? First one is, and I'm not going to look at anybody when I do these. I probably need a mirror if I was going to do that, but anyway. Okay, so he says, first of all, we make the assumption that our partners, family members, friends, colleagues know what we think, and if they really cared about us, they would know what we want. And when they don't do what we assume they should do, we say, you should have known. You should have known what I wanted. And here's a shocking observation. I know it's going to shock everyone. Although some people might be more intuitive than others, generally speaking, human beings are not mind readers. Okay? I don't care how much somebody loves you and cares about you, that person is not really able to read your mind. All right? Ruiz gives this example. This is in the fourth agreement. He says, you decide to get married, and you make the assumption that your intended sees this marriage exactly like you do. Well, good luck with that one, right? One of the questions I always ask brides and grooms, or grooms and grooms, or brides and brides, I always say, what's going to be your greatest challenge when you get, you know, when you get married? Because those are things we need to be thinking about and working through. So in a recent psychologist advice column, there was a letter from a newlywed woman who was upset because her husband, this is almost unbelievable, but after 6 months, her husband refused to give up his apartment and move in with her. I know. Well, of course, the initial comment from the psychologist was, I'm sure you can guess, did you have this discussion before you were married? Well, no. The woman made the logical, and let's admit it is logical, assumption that people usually live together after they're married. But that was not what was in this husband's plan. It was not in his consciousness. And Ruiz says we make assumptions so fast and so unconsciously because we have made an agreement not to ask questions. We lack the courage to ask the question. Okay, here's the next one. We assume that everyone sees life the way we do. Ruiz says we believe that others think the way we think, feel the way we feel, judge the way we judge. We say things like, well, I never would have done it that way. Or, what was he thinking about buying that house or choosing that partner? What was he thinking? And Ruiz notes that assuming we all think the same way often leads us to a fear of being ourselves around others because we think they will judge as we judge ourselves. And that's the next big assumption. We make assumptions about ourselves, and that creates a lot of inner conflict. When we believe we are not enough, how many times have we talked about that? In the book of joy, in the art of abundance, in all what Jesus taught, we are enough. We are individualized expressions of the Christ. How can we not be enough? But when we believe we are not enough, even before others have a chance to reject us, Ruiz says, we reject ourselves. Anybody remember Ruiz's definition of sin? Anybody remember it? Anything you do that goes what? Against yourself. Against yourself. He says sometimes we even lie to ourselves about what we really want. When we enter a relationship, we feel we have to justify why we chose that person. Sometimes we see only those things we want to see, and we deny those qualities we do not like. There's a saying for it, love is blind, right? Ruiz says you lie to yourself to make yourself right, and then eventually you have to face those less than desirable qualities in a partner or friend. So the next assumption is really huge, and I do believe, without looking at anybody, that I think a lot of us have fallen into this trap. I know that I have in my life. And that is, we assume that we can change others. We assume that our love is enough to change others. And Ruiz says this is absolutely not true. If others change, it's because they want to change, not because we can change them. Real love, he says, is accepting the person the way he or she is. If we try to change another, that means we really do not like him or her. And he says it's much easier to find someone who's already the way you want him or her to be than it is to change another person. It's also true that if a partner or friend is trying to change you, he or she doesn't really love you just the way you are. Here are Ruiz's words. He asks the compelling question, why be with someone if you are not what they want you to be? Pretty powerful. You have to be what you are. If you love me the way I am, he says, okay, take me. If you don't love me the way I am, okay, bye-bye. I'll find someone else. I'll find someone who does. He admits this sounds harsh, but he says this kind of communication means the personal agreements we make with others are clear and impeccable, and only good results from that. So another assumption that I think we can make sometimes is we believe that what we see is the whole truth about something. And we can never see all of it. This happens even in spiritual communities. I read a story this week about a woman who attended church every single Sunday but was well known for her relentless gossiping. So one time, she told everybody in the church that she had seen Elder Jones' truck parked in front of Mrs. Smith's house when Mr. Smith was out of town. Unequivocal proof, she told everyone, that they were having an affair. Well, actually, the truth was Elder Jones was remodeling the Smith's kitchen. That's why his truck was parked there. And when he heard about the woman's accusation, the very next night, he sneaked his truck in front of her house and left it. You all are fast. And left it there all night long, okay? And maybe that taught her that what one sees is not always what one perceives, right? So, I mean, seriously, how do we avoid this long-standing habit of assumicide? How do we avoid it? Well, since most assumptions are actually based on misconceptions, the way to keep from making assumptions, Ruiz says, is to have the courage to ask questions. Ask questions. Make absolutely sure that the communication is clear. If you don't understand, or even if you have a little glimmer of idea that you don't understand, ask. Ask until it becomes as clear as it can be. And I would say that questions asked in the right way with true curiosity and empathy are always safe. I had a colleague who had the art of asking questions in a very challenging way, and they weren't always safe. But if you ask them truly, if they come from your heart, questions are okay. You can always ask a question. So the second thing follows that, and that is to find your voice. Everyone has a right. You have to ask for what you want. Let me back up. Everyone who has a right to ask what they want, and the person you ask has a right to say what? Yes or no, either one. And that goes for us too. Conversely, people have the right to ask us what we want, and we always have the right to say yes or no. So a strategy that I'm sure many of you know from a book, Nonviolent Communication, by Marshall Rosenberg, is this. He says, first of all, calmly, without blame or shame, state your observations, facts as you see them. That's the first stage. Next, using I messages, express your feelings. Now, that doesn't mean you say to somebody, you made me mad. Nobody can really make you mad without your consent. But you say, I'm angry. I'm having trouble. I'm angry. Then you express your needs in the same way. And sometimes we have to spend some time figuring out what our needs are before we can express them. And finally, you simply ask for what you want. So let's go back to my friend's daughter, Kelsey, and see how that would have worked in her life. She could have gone up to her boyfriend and she could have said, now follow the little wheel around, fact, we've been together for 10 years. We've been together for a decade. Feeling, I love you, and I'm feeling uncertain about our future. Not but, notice, and. I love you and I'm feeling uncertain about our future. I need a timeline for where we're headed. And finally, the question is, are you willing for us to sit down and establish a plan for our future? And if he says no, Kelsey knows where she stands, right? And then she has the choice to stay with him for the rest of her life or to find somebody who wants to get married. So Ruiz says, even when we engage in open, clear communication, we can never know this whole story about another person, this is the last one, because we haven't lived it. I think of my brother and I. We were raised in the same household. We have the same two parents. We have totally different childhood stories based on a lot of factors. Birth order, gender, how we related to each parent. I mean, you know, no two of us have exactly the same story, even if you went through something together. And I love this quote. It's one of my favorite quotes. Do not judge my story by the chapter you walked in on. And how many times do we do that? We really do. And one thing we know for sure, one thing that we can judge with using our spiritual judgment is what we've already said, that every human being is the Christ in expression, no matter what behavior or conversation they might be showing to us. If we can say to ourselves, I am the Christ, I behold the Christ in you, this all gets a lot easier. So Ruiz says, when you stop making assumptions, you will communicate cleanly and clearly, free of emotional poison. With clear communication, all your relationships, not only with your partner, but with everyone else, will be improved. He says, if all humans could communicate in this way, there would be no wars, no violence, no misunderstandings. So this is the third agreement. Don't make assumptions. Find the courage to ask questions and express what you really want. Communicate with others as clearly as you can to avoid misunderstandings, sadness, and drama. That is the last agreement. And Don Miguel Ruiz says, this agreement can transform our lives. And he also admits that the third agreement is easier said than done, what some of us have found with the first two, because we have been so conditioned to do the opposite. We all have these habits, and we're not even aware of them. But the first step, he says, is to develop awareness of these patterns and to understand about the importance of this powerful agreement. Now, that's the first step, but it's not the last step. Understanding is not enough. Understanding is just the seed in our minds. What will make a difference is our intention and our action. It's like Unity Principle number 5. It's not enough to know the truth. You have to live the truth you know. So taking action over and over again will strengthen your will, nurture the seed, and establish a solid foundation for new habits to grow. And after many repetitions, the new agreements will become second nature. This way of communicating and being will become second nature. So Ruiz ends the chapter on the third agreement by saying, when you make this agreement a habit, your life will be transformed. What you need comes easily to you because Spirit moves freely through you. Let's not mistake that. Spirit, if we're not feeling Spirit, guess who moved? Right? It's us. Spirit is always moving, but we are not always open. We have to be open to it. He says, this agreement is the mastery of intent, the mastery of love, the mastery of gratitude, and the mastery of life. This is the goal of the Toltec. This is the path to personal freedom. So I hope you'll practice that this week, as I'm going to. And let's for now just prepare to take this into prayer and meditation by affirming the great truth about our infinite Spirit that makes all this possible. And for those of you who are here for the first time, this is printed in your bulletin. And let's say it together. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.